Mr. President.
Senator Porkerbiller.
I move that the further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Kevin McDonough from the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good morning, Mr. President and Senators. We pray this morning with Senator Higgins as she prays for her mom, and we give her into the care of God. Today is also the eighth and final day of Passover. For Jewish people, a day of celebration of particular identity, but for all the world, a celebration of freedom. Let's take a quiet moment and thank God for the privilege of living in this most free nation, a privilege that means great responsibility for all of you and all of us. Let's pray. Gracious God, what a privilege you give us that we might share in the right ordering of our lives and in the good order of our community, the care of our children and our elders, the common good. We thank you for the gift of freedom, ask you for strength and the responsibility it requires. We make all these prayers in your holy name, God, forever and ever. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parasol, Pogemeller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Spark, Stump, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. Quorum is present. We can read it, lay it on the table, and then he can decide what he wants. Decide what you want to do, okay?
Quorum is present. Next order of business is executive and official communications printed on today's agenda. The next order of business is messages from the House. Senator Cohen, we'll read the message first.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 846. Senate File 846 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Alvin A. Matthews, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 846 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Under motions and resolutions, there's one author's motion without objection. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Still under motions, Senator Saxhog. Senator Saxhog, did you wish to withdraw a bill from the Committee on Taxes and re-refer it to the Committee on Environmental and Natural Resources? Is that your motion?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. Mr. President.
Okay. And you've talked to the chairs of the respective committees. Everybody's agrees. On the Saxhog motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Laurie, did you have a motion to make?
Yes, Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1310 be stricken from the general orders and re-referred to the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee. This is a Secretary of State housekeeping bill that got erroneously passed out of committee as introduced rather than as amended, and we need to send it back to clean that up and get it back to general orders.
All those in favor of the Lurie motion signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Without objection, we'll take up first reading of Senate bill introductions. There's a change. The 2212 will go to the Business and Industry and Jobs Committee. And there's one to be read at the desk.
Senator Rest introduces Senate File 2215, a bill for an act relating to open meetings, defining terms, adding open meeting requirements, etc.
Without objection, this bill will be referred to the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
Still on motions. On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Members, I think we'll go to about noon today. And why don't we start with number 4 on general orders, Senate File 493. Number 5, Senate File 1236. Number 6, Senate File 1048. Number 8, Senate File 837. Number 18, Senate File 753. And number 19, Senate File 1696. And we'll go till noon or until we finish these bills.
The first bill under discussion is Senate File 493, Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 493 be recommended to pass.
Senator Moore, on the motion.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate File 493 is the civil gang injunction law. Too many of our children are being recruited to join criminal gangs and are getting killed because of gang activities. Our residents are subjected to loud noises, profanity, fights, and sounds of gunfire echoing in our streets. And our parks and community centers are riddled with gang graffiti and gang drug trafficking. And our sidewalks and streets are taken over by gangs. Our residents often don't feel safe, even within their own homes, because of stray bullets from gang activities taking place outside of their doorsteps. Criminal gangs and criminal gang violence are an ever-increasing in our communities, and the tools that we currently have do not enable us to make enough of a dent in the fight against criminal gang activities. The civil gang injunction law will be a valuable tool in curbing illegal gang activity in our neighborhoods. This tool will allow us to return to the public the places that have been taken over by the criminal gang elements. Instead of prosecuting one gang member at a time in a criminal proceeding, this tool will enable us to target multiple individuals in one civil action. So we can virtually shut down the criminal gang and its businesses by taking out its most active gang members and at the same time send a loud message to the gangs that we will not tolerate their behaviors and to send a message to the community that they can be safe in their own homes and neighborhoods again. It's been an effective and innovative tool. It's been used in Texas and California, increasingly in other states, to combat street gang activity and to reduce the stranglehold that gangs can have on our communities. Senate File 493, Mr. Chair and members, basically puts into law an opportunity for a law enforcement to be able to go after gang members in the commission of criminal gang activities. And a judge can make a finding that a criminal gang activity has taken place and that indeed a civil public nuisance has taken place. A judge then, if the court finds that the criminal gang does constitute a public nuisance, the court may enter a temporary or permanent order to enjoin the gang from specific activities. And in the orders, the judge, the statute allows the judge to provide reasonable requirements or reasonable limitations. The statute specifically defines that reasonable requirements or reasonable limitations is a injunctive limitation on gang behavior and social interaction that reduces the opportunity for gang activity consistent with constitutional rights of the defendants. There's also a provision here to define the public nuisance as gang activities that are regularly taking place at a particular property. And we've worked out with the Multi-Housing Association to provide a very specific notice to the landlord when the activities have been continuously and regularly occurring. The notice has to be in writing, and the notice has to specify the incidences that have led to that notice. The notice has to be sent by registered letter. It has to be signed and returned to the city. Mr. Chair and members, the once an injunction is in place, if an individual violates the injunction, there is a potential civil fine for civil contempt and a potential criminal penalty of a misdemeanor. When a landlord receives a notice that there's been gang activities at his property or her property, the landlord has a right to sue to cancel the lease. In working with the multi-housing folks who represent the landlords, we've put a provision in here where individuals who are involved in this, the prevailing party may receive reasonable attorney's cost to protect some of the landlords who may be involved in this. So, Mr. Chair and members, I hope to have your support. And, Senator, I will yield to Senator Limmer to explain an amendment that addresses some concerns of the landlords.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Moore, for the opportunity to work with you on this bill. As Senator Moore tried to relate in the explanation of her bill, one of the major elements to the bill is that the courts, as well as public officials who need to control gang activity that may be on a leased property, that the courts would not only be able to recognize that, but assert a little more responsibility and direction toward the owner. Now, a lot of times this particular bill might put a owner in between a court system and a tenant, and there's a contract. There's a contract of a lease. And we certainly don't want to put the owner, well-intended owner, in the bond of or a grip in between the court saying one thing and a contract that he wrote with another. So I'd like to introduce the A6 amendment, Mr. President, and I'll explain it after it's introduced.
Secretary will report the Limmer amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate file number 493 as follows. Page 1, line 17. This is the A-6 amendment.
Senator Limmer on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Moore and I were trying to, as the bill went and wandered through the Judiciary Committee, we felt as though it needed just a little bit more tightening of definition so that we don't put a landlord, a well-intended landlord, into a bind in between court action and a lease. This particular amendment not only refines the language, it also exchanges language on page 2, first the use of the place, with first it recognizes the activity of gang activity by a lessee or a tenant. And if it's knowingly permitted by the owner, it makes the owner responsible for making this property a public nuisance. In addition to that, it also involves, once the public nuisance is recognized, if that nuisance involves the use of the place as defined in section 117.92, subdivision 2, which is the bill itself, the owner is then responsible for maintaining the place and may be made a defendant if they refuse to address the subject activity. I'll stand for any questions.
Discussion on the Limmer Amendment. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Limmer yield?
He will yield. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. My question is about the owner. Do you think that without this amendment, this bill would discourage ownership of troubled and difficult properties in some of our more economically challenged neighborhoods in Minneapolis and St. Paul?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ortman, I believe that there are there certainly are neighborhoods. There's properties, cultural activities that sometimes make it a challenge for certain landlords to own property. And yet the fact remains that despite their best interests, they sometimes will rent to a troubled or a troublesome tenant. And they aren't always living right there at the site. They aren't living across the site. They may be living 5, 10, 20 miles away. And yet, if they know that there's gang activity on that property, the language in the amendment is more specific, and it recognizes not only the potential of gang activity as defined in Section 617.92, but if it's knowingly permitted, then the owner becomes a possible tenant in the direction of that activity. The whole premise of this particular bill when it comes to tenant and landlord is to make sure that the landlord becomes a good partner with city officials and the court, and that they, once they get this definition addressed to them by the courts, that they have to take action. But if they knowingly are aware that there is gang activity as defined in law, then they could be subject to public nuisance. And as being subject to public nuisance, they may become a defendant. That's what this amendment's about. I don't know if I answered your question entirely.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. President, perhaps maybe Senator Ma could yield, because maybe my question was inartful or there's additional information I'd like to know. I'm wondering if there's any kind of affirmative defense on the part of an owner or absentee owner that the police were notified or some way to make sure that they can defend themselves if they've done what they can to stop the gang activity, but it continues on their property. What we don't want is for them to decide to disinvest or to take their money elsewhere and not invest in these troubled properties.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill is the intent is to give protections to owners of properties as much as it is to give protections to people in the neighborhoods. And I would think that if you were a landlord and you've been given notice that gang activities are taking place at your property, the issue that I've heard is that oftentimes it is really difficult for landlords to get any assistance to deal with problematic tenants, and I think this gives them a tool. It isn't just neighborhoods or specific locations that could petition for a public nuisance injunction against gang activities. A certain landlord who continues to have tenants or maybe activities not necessarily related to their tenants taking place on their property that is disturbing other tenants could also go to the city and bring a nuisance lawsuit to protect his or her property. Specific to landlords, the notice provision is very, very, very specific. The notice provision gives, first of all, in order for something to be continuously or regularly a gang activity, it has to be at least 5 separate incidents or occurrences in a period of not more than 12 months. And so in the notice to the landlord that these criminal activities are happening, that has already have to take place. 5 occurrences would have to take place. The notice would have to be to state very specifically the evidence that the nuisance is occurring, including the dates on which these nuisance-related activities are allegedly having occurred, inform the landlord that the failure to abate the conduct constituting the nuisance or otherwise resolve the matter within 16 days of this notice may result in the filing of a complaint. Once the notice has been given, the landlord has 60 days to work out with the city to address the issue. We provide a tool here for the landlord to go to the city to say, you know, I object. You have 60 days to object. Or they can go and say, you're right, these are bad apples, and I want to, you know, move to cancel the lease. We provide those kind of tools to protect the landlords as well as the neighborhood. So I think... you know, Senator Ortman and I have talked at length about this. Senator Ortman and I have respectfully agreed to disagree on the implications. I'm appreciative that she is raising this concern. But the language in this bill was worked out very, very carefully with the Multi-Housing Association. They came to the committee to testify. They sat at the table to give their blessing to the provisions pertaining to landlords. And I've been working very hard with Senator Limerick to provide additional comfort language so that landlords will know that the intent here is not to target or to go after landlords, but really to provide tools and an opportunity to create a sense of community where both landlords and members of the community can feel like they can reclaim their spaces again.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Motley
yield
for my question? Thank you. My question is this, Senator. What does a landlord do? Does this give them the authority, say, without a conviction, to interrupt a lease? That's where I'm just wondering how they would be able to do that, and if there's a way for them to deal with that.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, the Subdivision 3 of the bill gives the landlord an opportunity to file a motion to cancel the lease. So after the service of the notice, within that 60 days, the owner could bring a motion to cancel a lease involving any tenants or involved in the activities.
Discussion on the Limmer Amendment. Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do have a question for Senator Limmer, if you would yield. Mr. President, Senator Limmer, in Section 2, Subdivision 2, it is really one of the key provisions of this bill. It says the continuous or regular use of a place by a criminal gang for engaging gang activity, etc. So we're looking at the place. Now, if you look up at the definition section, starting page 1, line 16, that defines place. Now, your amendment, let me back up. It says place includes a commercial structure that is maintained for business activities, which I would assume would be any commercial structure. But you are limiting that now with your amendment on page 1, line 2, which means that the commercial structure would have to be or a portion of the structure have to be subject to a lease. Why would we want to limit this to only leased structures? Wouldn't we want it to have it apply to all commercial structures? It refers to the second structure. It says a portion of the structure. Wouldn't it be any part of the structure, regardless of whether it's leased or not? Why do we need page 1, line 2, which adds that is subject to a lease?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Betzel, the reason why the amendment is written the way it was due to a concern that some landlords, the closest relationship they have in controlling their property is with the tenant. If there's other activity that's going to go on, let's say walking across a parking lot or walking down a sidewalk, the way the bill was written, it could be blurred, the definition could be blurred that anyone walking through there who happen to participate in gang activity now becomes subject to some type of landlord responsibility. Landlord, really, there has to be some limits to what the landlord can be responsible for. And, of course, the whole intention of the bill was to strengthen, not only clean up gang activity, but to strengthen a tool for a landlord to work with civil authorities so that if there was gang activity and it was brought to his attention, he could respond to that by canceling these people out of the lease. If you're dealing with any other type of property, or more particularly any type of non-tenant, then the landlord really doesn't have, he loses that control over that individual. How can he enforce that action?
Well, Senator Betzel.
Again, Mr. President, Senator Lerman, I'm trying to understand the part of the amendment. Why does the building have to be subject to a lease? I mean, if there's no lease involved in there, if it's just somebody who owns the building, there's no lease involved there, but there's gang activity going on there, why does a lease have to be involved? We keep trying to tie this into landlord-tenant law, but the gang activity that we're trying to get at can take place, you know, wherever it happens on the place is the behavior we're trying to get at. And now I believe that we're narrowing it by saying you also have to have a lease relationship involved here. I'm saying, why do you need a lease relationship? Why can't we just leave it as, you know, anything happening in the place? Because I think now you've got fewer areas that you can have this bill applying to instead of having more, which I think would be the purpose of the bill.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, thank you. Senator Betzel, the way it's been described to me is that certainly landlord-tenant relationship has to be defined in this particular bill. This amendment does that in a narrow way. It was not my intention to change drastically the bill, as you may suggest, regarding the use of the property. It's just that once the property is used, let's say by a group of kids that hang out in the front yard, but they're not tenants, how does a landlord outside of police officials, how do they become responsible for those individuals that sporadically may use that property as a place to either camp out or they try to shoo them away? And yet, if they can't do it, or if it comes back over and over and over again over a summer, how does a landlord, should they be considered a public nuisance in that regard when they've done their best intention? There happens to be a number of activities that have to be triggered first. So you and I are going around the same circle as we've discussed in the committee.
Well,
Senator Betzel.
Again, I'll take one more stab at this. The whole thrust of the bill is to go at the place where gang activity is taking place. It shouldn't matter whether it's leased property or whether somebody owns the property or however it is. You know, everybody owns, you know, every piece of property is owned by some entity. Whether there's a lease involved should be immaterial. I recognize that you're trying to watch out for the landlord's rights. But whether it's leased or owned or however it's, whatever the title happens to be, wherever the place is, that's what we're trying to get at. I'm just pointing out that in the definition of place, you are amending a portion of the structure. It shouldn't matter whether there's a lease involved or there's no lease involved. If it's a portion of the structure that's used for gang activity, that should be subject to this bill. But what your amendment does is to say that the portion of the structure has to be subject to a lease. So I'm saying that if somebody comes in and says, I know gang activity was taking place in the portion of the structure, but there was never a lease involved, so this law doesn't apply to me, then can't they defeat the purpose of this by just saying, there was no lease here, therefore it doesn't apply?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, Senator Betzold, if I could direct you to line 2, page 1 of the amendment. If we removed the new language in the amendment on line 2, would that address your concern?
Mr.
Betzold.
President, Senator Limmer, yes.
Did Mr. you President, wish to...
I wish to amend my amendment.
Okay, what did... Try it again, Senator Limmer, with the Secretary.
I wish to amend the A6 amendment by removing line 2, page 1 of the amendment.
You're deleting line 1.2?
Yes.
We'll report the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend his amendment to Senate File 493 as follows on page 1 of his amendment. Delete line 2, or that would be 1.2.
1.2. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Any discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Any further discussion on the Limmer amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File 493 as amended? Is there no further discussion? Senator Moi moves that Senate File 493 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill under discussion today on general orders will be Senate File 1236, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this is landmark legislation. Okay, at least two members are listening. Mr. President, this is the Department of Employee Relations Technical and Housekeeping Bill. It has three sections that I will briefly highlight. Section 1 is a technical clarification that relates to Section 43A in our statutes.
Senator Michelle, you should make the motion that when this committee do arise that Senate File 1236 be recommended to pass. Is that
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1236 be recommended to pass.
Okay, now discussion, Mr. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Back to our landmark legislation. Again, Section 1 is a technical clarification to Sections 43A in our state statutes. When this was originally drafted, the department felt that they needed to make this change. This section, Mr. President, had an unintended consequence of requiring agencies to justify non-affirmative action hires in more areas than originally intended. So the department believes this correction will uphold the integrity of the civil service hiring process as well as the affirmative action compliance process. And it does not change current practice, Mr. President. Mr. President, Section 2 of this bill, Section 2 of the bill relates to the State Employee Group Health Insurance Plan, otherwise known as CGIP. And this just allows for the words, Mr. President, this clarifies that CGIP may seek proposals, and not bids when entering into new vendor contracts. This will ensure that CGIP continues its past and current practice of contracting with the most qualified vendors. The final section of the bill, Mr. President, Section 3, deals with voluntary unpaid leave. This would write it into session law, Mr. President, and would allow the practice of unpaid leave to extend into the next biennium. The department believes these changes provide employees a valued benefit and also provide state agencies some flexibility when dealing with the budget, Mr. President. I'll stand for questions and understand Senator Frederickson.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A1 amendment. I'd move that amendment.
Secretary will report the Frederickson A1 amendment.
Senator Frederickson moves to amend Senate File 1236 as follows on page 3, line 12. This is the A-1 amendment.
Senator Frederickson on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is entirely a word usage technical amendment. The entirety of the amendment is to delete such A and insert the word unpaid.
Discussion on the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 1236. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Michelle that Senate File 1236 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders will be Senate File 1048, Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1048 be recommended to pass.
Senator Laurie, on the bill.
Thank you. This is a bill to restructure the Indian Affairs Council. It is intended to better facilitate relations between the state of Minnesota and the tribal governments within our state. There is only one section in this bill. It does a few things. First, it restructures the membership a little bit. The primary restructuring is to allow the tribal chairpersons to designate a member to come and meet with the Indian Affairs Council on a periodic basis. And it restates and cleans up some of the duties of the council, and then it calls for an annual summit where the actual tribal chair members themselves and the governor and legislative leaders will get together and discuss how to better facilitate relations between the tribal governments. This is should be a fairly straightforward, non-controversial bill. It's supported by the tribes brought this to me, and I would appreciate a yes vote on this. Would stand for questions.
A further discussion on Senate File 1048. There be no further discussion. The question occurs on the motion of Senator Laurie that Senate File 1048 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders will be Senate File 837, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 837 be recommended to pass.
Senator Koch, discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill on phase is talking about a Wright County, Hennepin County border change, but the bill is actually fairly simple. We heard a testimony from the city of Rockford, from the mayor of the city of Rockford, who also happens to be on the fire department, and from a resident of Rockford, and I've heard from several. And the big concern is there's just some public safety concerns. The city of Rockford is situated, 88% of the city of Rockford is in Wright County, 12% of the property for the city of Rockford is in Hennepin County. And there has been some confusion in emergency situations. The city of Rockford is not very big, but it incurs additional expenses because it pays two county attorneys, two county assessors. It has the dual responsibility at election time. We also heard from the residents that different services for the residents of Rockford. We heard from one woman who her son has been involved, unfortunately, with the court system, and it happens in Wright County, and so she goes to Wright County. They send her to Hennepin County. She takes the day off of work, brings her son into Hennepin County, and the Hennepin County judge says, well, it happens in Wright County, and sends them off. So the city of Rockford is asking, all this does is to begin the process. This would now move to the county boards. It would require approval by both county boards. Then they would go through the process to put this on the ballot, and actually all the residents of Hennepin County, all the residents of Wright County, then would get an opportunity to vote on this. So we're not moving any borders this morning. This is just permissive language that officially allows the process to go forward, and I would appreciate your support for it.
Further discussion on Senate File 837. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Koch that Senate File 837 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next bill on general orders this morning will be Senate File 753, Senator Rummel. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair.
18.
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 753 be recommended to pass.
All right. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill addresses a very important problem It addresses a way to find qualified judges to act as qualified individuals to act as election judges. In recent years, it has become more and more difficult to identify people who are willing to serve as election judges. The bill provides that appointing authorities may make appointments from the list submitted by the political parties, but it also requires that at least two election judges in each precinct be affiliated with the major party, and requires party balance among the judges appointed with a major affiliation, party affiliation. Finally, it permits appointment of election judges without major party affiliation. In addition, this is a bipartisan bill, and it is considered non-controversial. I hope that we can all support it.
Any further discussion on Senate File 753? Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Rummel that Senate File 753 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next bill under consideration and general orders will be number 19, Senate File 1696, Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 1696 be recommended to pass. This bill is what's become known as the Low-Income Energy Affordability Program bill. That you may recall, it was passed in the Senate last year as part of the Energy Omnibus Bill, but because there was no Energy Omnibus Bill ultimately passed in the House, these provisions did not become law. It was then and remains now a non-controversial bill and was developed by low-income consumer advocates in consultation and in partnership with Minnesota's investor-owned utilities. The utilities support this bill. The bill does three things. It adds affordability of energy among the factors that the Public Utilities Commission takes into consideration when setting utility rates. It provides that natural gas utilities establish low-income affordability programs, and it permits but does not require electric companies to establish the same programs. These programs require low-income customers who are struggling to pay their bills to make the maximum monthly payment they can afford. The federal low-income energy assistance program dollars are also tapped to help out. Any remaining shortfall is made up by the program. The goal of these affordability programs is to create win-win-win outcomes. The consumer wins because the consumer achieves energy stability and security by not having to worry about getting disconnected if they cannot meet the entire bill. The utilities win because the companies receive higher and more regular payments from the customers, reducing or eliminating the need to send disconnect notices and freeing up customer service representative time. The ratepayers win because more revenue comes into the company than otherwise would absent the program. Collection and disconnection costs are reduced or eliminated for these customers, and the bad debt is limited from these consumers. Xcel has a program that's been working well, and they've been proven to work in other states. I ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1696, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Clark yield for a question?
She will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Clark, as we're trying to hold down the cost for low-income users of utilities, would there be a cost reduction? Certainly there'd be a cost reduction recognized for them. How would that cost be made up for the industry? Do they eat it? Do they absorb it? How is that ultimate cost taken care of? Or do the rest of the ratepayers absorb that difference?
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, currently absent these programs, the ratepayers pay a much more significant cost and the utility companies eat the cost. What happens in these kind of programs is because ongoing and regular payments are made, it actually reduces the amount of money that's not brought in. So it actually helps all of us. And it depends upon the company, the person, and others. By also tapping into the federal LIHEAP program, it brings more additional federal dollars to bear than otherwise might be. But because there's ongoing and consistent payments where otherwise there might not be, it actually helps us all. But I can't give you an actual figure because it depends.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, Senator Clark, let's just assume there was a bill, a utility bill, a gas bill for $120 for a month. And if that individual could only afford to pay half of that, this bill would recognize that ability to pay, and then that balance, the remaining $60, I'm trying to determine there's a negative cash flow somewhere. Who or what would absorb that missing $60 for the gas that was used?
Senator Clark.
Right now, without that, it may be that the money is just unclaimed and that it is a loss to the company and then passed on to the ratepayers. But with this, what would happen under your scenario is a payment plan would be set up. They would need to make the payments every month, and it may just be that it's longer than it would otherwise take someone who could afford the whole thing. But it means they have ongoing and uninterrupted service, and it means that company actually gets the payment than they otherwise would have. The other thing that happens often in these programs is that budgeting assistance occurs so that the consumer may be able to find other ways to be using their limited resources to be making sure they're making good on these bills. But what we see is a much higher payment rate than we would otherwise. And again, Xcel has been doing something like this with great success.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1696? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Clark that Senate File 1696 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, let's designate one more, number 21 on general orders, 1335. And I yield to Senator Olsen.
Okay, number 21 on general orders, Senate File 1335, Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, this bill be recommended to pass.
Senator Olsen on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that addresses and strengthens the cold weather protections for municipal and cooperative utility customers. What this bill does, it was non-controversial in the Energy Committee. It allows some language talks to the reconnection of utilities once they've been cut off, and it also hinders disconnecting from the utilities over the weekend or holidays or at times when utility workers aren't available. It also removes unnecessary requirement that a person declare that they can't pay. Instead, only those at below 50% of the state median are eligible for the protection under this rule. So it's a bill to address the reconnect of low-income energy users.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1335? Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion. Oh, excuse me, Senator Organ.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Olsen yield?
He will yield. Senator
Senator Olsen, just a question. Does it have to be rehooked even if they've made absolutely no effort to pay whatsoever, nothing's been done, it's been disconnected all summer, and all of a sudden, wham, they just have to be reconnected even though they've made no effort to repay the utility or to set up a payment schedule or anything of the kind?
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, you're right. That is the initiating step. They do have to come forward and say that they do have a concern making the payment. So that would be what initiates the reconnect.
Further discussion on Senate File 1335. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Olsen that Senate File 1335 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate will be in order. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We're still under motions. There are two motions to be read at the desk.
Senator Erickson Ropes moves that Senate File 1128, number 47 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
This is your bill, Senator. Senator Murphy on the
Yes,
oh,
Mr.
Excuse. Senator Murphy, wait just a second. Senator Ropes. Erickson Ropes.
Yes, I move that Senate File 1128, it's number 27 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, this is your bill, and okay, all those in favor, yes, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Yeah, another one to be read.
Murphy, yep.
One more to be read at the desk. Senator Murphy, you have the motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 1806, number 58 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. That is my bill. It's got Senator Cohen needs to see it.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Now?
Senator Cohen, is this the one we addressed earlier in the day?
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 846 previously laid on the table be taken off the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Cohen.
And Mr. President, now I would move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 846 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. And Mr. President,
okay,
that motion.
Senator Cohen, you want to?
Yep, Mr. President.
Tell the body of the differences or what the...
Mr. President, this bill is the deficiency bill we passed a couple of weeks ago. The House added some language relative to the Metropolitan Council transportation provision. I'm actually going to defer to Senator Clark on this. This was a language she had worked on the issue as it left the Senate floor and can speak to the language provided by the House and some of the work that's gone on.
Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, this provision, what's been happening is this relates to the New Flyer bus contracts that were coming in front of the Met Council, where the New Flyer company had the lowest bid, and there's been a couple of issues. This has been being worked on a bipartisan basis. There's been a lot of concern that the lowest bid, that also happens to be a Minnesota-based company, wasn't accepted. And so our provision had said they need to take the lowest bid. The House, again, on a bipartisan basis, brought forward language that says that they need to be looking at a revised best and final offer, and then also would put together a legislative oversight panel on procurements over $125 million, not looking at small projects, but larger ones, because there's a lot of concern about what is the process that's being done.
Now, this amendment could be found in the House Journal, April 2nd, page number 2413. Any further discussion?
Mr. President.
Senator Worgen.
Mr. President, this is a pretty substantial change that we really haven't had any time to digest. It changes many parts of the bill. It changes the oversight of the Metropolitan Council. It changes the way they do bids.
Senator Cohen?
Mr. President, I just was informed that Senator Worgen or other members of the minority had not had a chance to review this, so I would withdraw my motion and then renew my motion to lay it on the table.
On the motion to lay it on the table, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Any further stuff up there?
That's it.
I believe that concludes the work at the desk, and we're into Senator Pogemiller announcements. Senate interest.
Senator Worgen, are there announcements on your side?
Senator Worgen.
Mr. President, there will be a Senate Republican leadership meeting in 3:30 immediately following session. That would be Senate Republican, Senator Pogemiller. But, of course, if you're interested in changing substantially, you're welcome.
If there are no other announcements.
Yeah, before you make your motion to adjourn, Senator Berglund and Senator Langseth will be excused from today's session. All day. Senator Scheid, did you have an announcement?
Mr. President, yes. Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee will meet exactly at 12:30. Please be there.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, the Transportation Committee will meet at 12:30. There's only two bills on the agenda, so show up early. We'll leave early.
Further announcements, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, welcome back. Hope everybody had a peaceful time with their families. And our intent this week would be to keep the floor sessions relatively short like this so that the policy committees can finish their work. I believe the deadline is Saturday. So, and there perhaps will be some policy committee meetings on Saturday, so I would check with your chairs on that. I don't know that there are, but I presume that there's quite a bit of policy work to do, so there may be some Saturday committee meetings. Mr. President, I would move that the Senate now adjourn till April 11th, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.